The Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Welcome to Desert Island Discs. I'm Flavia Tumusiime Kabura and I love it. Every single Sunday we get to delve into someone's story and sometimes just like you and I. So similar that you actually know what to do and how to do it after listening to the stories. If you've missed anything in the past, anywhere you get podcasts, look for Capital FM Uganda and you'll be able to access all those stories. Tonight, my guest is the Commissioner for Education, Training, Information and Communications at the Equal Opportunities Commission. That is Mr. Julius Kamya. Welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you, Flavia.
Welcome, and how we like to start the show is anywhere in your childhood, and maybe a memory that is lingering. Mm-hmm. Take us there and let's start your story.
Thank you very much, Flavia, and thank you for hosting me on Capital FM. Mm. I have listened to Capital since the mid-90s.
Oh, bless.
Yes, I think Capital FM came on air when I was a university student.
Oh.
Yes, so as you said, I am Julius Kamya. Mm. Senkal is the other name I don't usually mention, but it's the name that makes me belong to a clan in Buganda.
Right.
It's not on my papers.
But Tumusiime in me would have to ask which clan.
That is the Mbogo clan.
Mbogo.
The Mbogo
clan. Okay.
You know, these clans, I'm told, are not translated. So you don't say Buffalo clan.
No.
It's the Mbogo clan.
Yes.
So I was born, at that time my mom was staying around Katwe. Mm. She gave birth to me in Mengo Hospital.
Okay.
My mom was a friend to my senga, my paternal auntie.
Mm.
I think she...
Who would be her sister-in-law?
Her sister-in-law.
Yes.
My mom was not a wife in my father's house.
Okay.
My father is from Kayunga.
Mm.
He's now long gone. But I think when he used to come to the city to do some trade, take back things to Nazigo, his sister linked him up to some beautiful one. And that's how they that's how they got me. Growing up as a child, what do I remember? I used to dread a rain season. Mm. I would not go out to play with my peers.
Okay.
Until it was dry. But something that I remember, which never gets out of my mind, is the day my mom took me to a mwalimu. My father was Muslim. Mm. But when I came to this earth, I think I never went to stay in his home.
Right.
I was with my mom. Mm. And I want to think that she used to pester him to make sure I join his religion.
Okay.
So when he was not responding, one day she just took me to a mwalimu she knew for circumcision.
Oh.
So she held my hand. I was made to lie down facing up. She held my hands. The mwalimu stepped on my legs.
Oh dear.
And it was gone.
You were a bit older at this point.
I was about 5.
Oh dear Lord.
So I think between 4 and 5.
I have sons, so you can imagine I'm cringing. Oh, the pain.
Yes. I thought he was brutal, really.
Yeah. Mm. You didn't hate mom for a bit?
No, but I bothered her in the days that followed.
For
pain,
healing.
The pain.
You're Julius.
Yes.
So they'd never decided on a Muslim name?
No, I was Ibrahim.
Ibrahim. Okay.
And later the priest who journeyed me into Christianity said after my baptism, said, "Why did you not retain your name,
Abraham,
the grand
father of nations?"
Yes. So yeah. I didn't know.
It would have been an easy transition.
I would have said Abraham.
Eh? Mm.
So I changed that name when I was. The first attempt, I was in P4.
Mm.
The nuns in the school where I was asked me to get permission from my parents.
Mm.
My mom, of course...
She was a Christian?
She was, yes.
Okay.
She said no, because she didn't have that authority.
She seemed to, despite the fact that your father wasn't in her life the way, you know, typical family was. She seemed to really want that bond. She bridged that bond.
Yes.
Did you get to meet him and have your own relationship, minus the one she would have?
I met him, but we didn't bond.
Okay.
Because for most of the time, I was in boarding school.
Okay.
And back from there, I would be with my mom.
Mm.
She made a few attempts that some holidays I go to stay with him and the other siblings. He wasn't in for that.
Mm.
He thought I would be a bother to them.
Right.
But I remember the long holiday after P5. When I was going to P6, I insisted. I told my mom, this time we are going, because she wanted to get some support from him for my school.
Financial support,
yes.
Yeah.
So I told her, we're going together and you are leaving me there.
Oh.
Yes. I'm if he says he doesn't want me to stay, I'll tell him I'm staying.
And you were determined.
And that's what happened.
Really?
Yes. I asked him, why don't you want me to stay here? They said, no, you will get issues. Your colleagues will be going to the gardens and they will find problems. They have to look after you, and you will also get problems because people are running up and down and nobody's attending to you. I said, watch the space. I'm going to the gardens with them. I will go to fetch water with them. And that's what happened.
Wow.
Because in Soroti, where I went for my primary school, we were taught to do
everything
on our own. We were gardening, run here and there, fetch water, do what. The school has a big compound. We didn't have any workers to clean the school for
us. So you had to do it yourself.
We did it for ourselves, and that's a school for the blind. So anyway.
You became adaptable. Do you want to take us back to whether the blindness was from birth or situation that happened later on?
Right. I was told that when I was about 4 months old, my left eye was identified with a tumor. When I was taken to the medical practitioners, they diagnosed that to be what they called retinoblastoma, which is a type of eye cancer. It eats the retina, and if you do not hurry, it eats up the other. And eventually the brain. So that was plucked out on medical advice to save the right eye. I am told, my mom was told to take me there regularly for review.
Right.
We never did that.
After the left eye was removed, you were meant to be going back frequently.
Yes, for review. When I healed from that surgery, I never went back.
Oh.
Eventually, my mom took me to my grandma, the father of my dad, that is in Kayunga, somewhere on Abusana Road. So that when I had just started the school, I think I was about 8 years, and midway my second term, waking up to prepare for school, I couldn't see. I was blind. That eye was blinded. I won't think that my sight kept maybe reducing, getting blood, but as a child I wouldn't know. So
you weren't bothered. You're thinking, I can see a bit, but it's okay.
No, I could see. I kept saying I could see, look at the blackboard, write in the books, and so on. But it just blew off one morning. I washed and washed until I felt I was getting wounded on the skin.
You're trying to wash off whatever you
So later on, I still went to school. I really wanted to go to school.
So this happened at home?
Yes.
And so you don't tell mom?
I was with my grandma.
Oh, you were with grandma?
Yes.
And Jaja didn't settle in a jolaga.
I told her I can't see.
Okay.
And for some reason, she thought I was being cheeky.
Ah.
In fact, she would say, get me this. And then I go, what do you call that? Groping.
Yeah.
And he says, no, he doesn't want to be sent for things.
I think he put two.
Yes. So I ended my second term without sight, but I continued up to the end of that second term. And surprising, I was the 11th out of 33.
Oh, you still did pretty well.
I couldn't write in
but
the book.
But you see, because that school wasn't an adaptable school. It wasn't an inclusive school.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't. I think those days to talk of inclusion.
It wasn't even there.
Yeah. So I think what helped me, it was this Islamic school. Mm. There were some orals in the tests, in the exams. Mm. So I think that's where I managed to get some results.
Okay.
Otherwise, in the book, I really could write and overwrite.
I can understand now as an adult that if I get a challenge, it will be heavy.
Yes.
It will almost yank at my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But you sometimes find yourself you've overcome, but the trauma stays with you sometimes with the experience of things. At 7 or 8, to not just go through any trauma, but the trauma of losing your eyesight fully. What happens to your mind as a child?
Wow. Now, what I recall that time, I knew I couldn't see. But what was clear in my mind is that I need to continue with life as a child.
Mm.
I don't remember sorrowing.
Wow.
I just continued playing. I kept hoping I'll keep knowing the compound as usual. And I kept running around. Very few times would I knock myself against things, especially those that were placed in the way that I would pursue.
Tables or stones,
if it was a stone that was there, these big stones stationed in that place, those ones I never knocked myself against them.
It's memory. You remembered where you used to pass?
Exactly.
Wow.
But it is these things that you carry and place and forget. Maybe you put a basin here.
Yes.
Those ones, I would crash into them.
Oh.
I remember my bigger brother I was staying with, he devised a way to help me.
Mm-hmm.
He got a long stick and said, now that I'm blind, he will hold on to that stick, go ahead of me, and I follow him from behind holding the rear. I told him I don't want this.
Wait, what?
And I had no idea how blind people should be helped.
You were 7 or 8. You were just being a child.
Yes.
Yeah.
I said, no, I'm not accepting this way of walking.
I'll just figure myself out. You were resilient. And I think being young also helped for you to be resilient
through it. So anyway, before we knew what, one of the teachers told Grandma, your child should not come back to school third term.
Oh.
He's blind. That's when it dawned on her that, he has not just been cheeky. He doesn't see.
You're trying to tell me Jaja the whole time.
Yes.
Assumed it was just pretense.
Yes.
And you just maneuvered through everything.
I just maneuvered. They saw I wasn't affected with my mobility.
You were playing as a child.
Yes.
Why would...
I continued ordinarily.
Oh, wow.
I kept going to the gardens. I kept going to the well.
What?
I kept fetching firewood.
This is... What kind of resilience is that?
Mm.
You definitely weren't affected emotionally.
I wasn't.
But for her, when Jaja found out, I'm sure her life changed.
She was. She immediately sent for my Senga in Katwe.
Mm.
She came for me, and then my Senga also called for Mom.
Mm.
And Mom came. Ever since Mom took me to the village, I had seen her, I think, twice in about 3 years.
Yeah.
Now, this is about the third time she comes to Senga's place to see how
the situation,
I am, to see that situation. So she takes me to Mulago.
Okay.
And because she's in Mulago where the first operation had been done.
Ah, yes.
So they tell her, wow, you did not come back.
For the review.
Now this eye is gone. No solution, it has to be plucked out. She said, now why pluck it out? You removed the other one to save this.
And if nothing has happened.
Nothing. So that did not help.
Mm.
So we are not plucking out this one. I also joined her. I said, no,
leave
I'm not
it.
To leave my eye.
I can imagine that review with the doctor. These two determined people.
She said, fine. The doctor said, fine. That's okay.
Because leaving the eye in would not mean that it would affect what you had said, eventually the brain cells.
Of course, the doctor had, I think, explained that it would be a problem if we left
later.
It in there.
Mm.
So when we came back to Senga's home place, Senga now takes on the route of the traditional whatever.
And see, the Mzungu doctors have failed.
Yes, those ones have failed. Mm. And then I found all the messes in that place, everybody with their story.
Mm.
He was bewitched. Yeah. There is a co-wife to the mom who wanted to bewitch her, and then the whatever portion got the child while still in the womb.
Mm.
We moved to several of those, and then the last one was where we were required to go to the lake and do whatever. Yeah. I don't remember.
Oh dear.
And they needed the parents, or at least one of them.
Mm.
The easier one
was mommy.
Was thought to be mommy. She was a Christian. Mm. She refused.
Mm.
She said, God gave me this child. If this is what he wanted, let him be so.
Wow.
I'm not going to the lake. At that point, Senga gave up. She had no other way.
Mm.
Mom then took me to her uncle, paternal uncle, who she thought was her real father until she was beyond 20, somewhere in Luero.
Mm.
That man was a herbalist. Who doesn't invoke the powers of spirits.
Okay.
But he just goes to the bush, picks up this and that.
Oh, yes. Studies herbs and plants.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that was his cup of tea was to treat problems with the eyes.
Mm.
So mom thought he would do something.
He should be able to fix it. Yeah.
I was there for about 2 months. Mm-hmm. and
nothing happened. Okay.
So when I came back to her in Kampala, I stayed with her for about 2 weeks.
Mm.
The eye now started aching profusely and bulging.
Right.
I told her, let's go, pluck this out.
And hit the doctors.
It was very, very painful.
Okay.
So at that time, I think I was about 9 years.
Mm.
We went to the doctor. She got her abuses and... I was taken to the theater.
So now I understand how you then got to at P5, about 10 or whatever, moving to daddy's now, and I see that.
When my eye was plucked out, that last eye, I remember asking mom the evening it was plucked out, when I woke up, I asked, was it removed? And she said, oh yes, it was removed.
Yeah.
I remember clearly that's when I lost hope of seeing again.
Mm.
I think all along I had been thinking that maybe one day the eye will see. Wow. Now knew I will never see again. That rang clearly in my brain.
Okay.
So
the young boy who had moved on with playing and not bothered,
yes,
this time it was different.
This time it was clear I will never see. And the next questions to her were, will I go to school again?
Oh.
And
oh,
each
bless.
Time I asked those, tears would run down her cheeks. And I didn't know this.
Mm.
I never knew I was tormenting her.
Mm.
So I said, I want to go to school. The other children would go, come back in the evening, we play. Then I said, but I'm tired of staying here.
Yeah.
I want to go to school again. Can I also go to school even if I don't see? Until people told her in the Ministry of Education that there are many options because he's young, but the best is Soroti.
That's how you ended up in Soroti.
That's how I went to Soroti.
Wow. I want to hear your first song choice.
Let's do Kanyimbe by Juliana.
Gamukama wori sitya sisonga wadenga siri na mani kuba mukama tula muze ori wa mani sebo sisonga wadenga siri na sente kuba gwe katunda gwe sinza ensi yenu.
Yeah.
On Capital FM, fresh hits for Uganda.
This is Desert Island Discs. That was Kanyimbe by Julian Akanyomozi. I remember the first time I ever listened to this song, I was actually here at Capital, and it was, you know, when you have earphones on, music almost goes straight to your brain and heart, and I cried because it's a beautiful reiteration of what God has done and how far we've come. I have Mr. Julius Kamia saying Kali now to get you are the commissioner for education, training, information and communications at Equal Opportunities Commission. Of course, it's good to know how the journey ends up taking you to a place that actually fights for the rights of those who are less able to.
Right.
I mean, I'm glad that you really wanted to go to school despite the blindness that I actually befallen you there. Yes. So Soroti is a school.
Is a school for the blind. Yes. It was the school for the blind
at the time.
That is my P1 79.
70s.
Yes.
I'm curious to whether you cared that it was a school for the blind. Was it a thing of, oh, okay, now we're all here versus I can go to a school like everybody else? Or for you, it was, I'm going to school, full stop.
For me, it was when I was told that you are going to be with other blind children, I was anxious.
Okay.
Because I had not met a blind child like me.
Like you, yeah.
I had only seen one blind person who was a grown-up man a few years when I was still sighted. Now I'm meeting children who don't see like me.
Yeah.
I felt at home.
Okay.
I felt at home and bonded so fast.
Wow.
I found people speaking English. I had not yet learned English where I had tried to start my primary school and decided I must learn this English.
Yeah. This special language that everyone is using.
Yes. So I got a little boy who was in P1 like me, but he was doing P1 his third year. He taught me, and after about 2 terms, I didn't need his teaching again.
Could speak English.
I started teaching him.
I like that. Oh, wow. So Soroti is primary.
Primary, yes.
Yes. Then you moved on to where?
I moved to Iganga Secondary School, a girls' school today, but with both boys and girls who don't see.
Ah, wow. Eh? Okay. Uh-huh. That's unique.
So you find about 1,500 students who are sighted. Then the annex for the blind is maybe 40, 50. Scattered in the various classes.
Okay.
So I joined them in senior 2, 1987, and I think there were 5 of us in senior 2, together with about 170 girls. Yes.
Okay. And so you were there your entire secondary school or higher education?
I was there up to senior 6, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And where did you go on after that?
After that, I went to Makerere University.
Were you eyeing something that you wanted to do?
I knew what I wanted, even in S2.
What?
I wanted to do LLB, to do law.
Law.
We started hearing stories from our colleagues who had left for Makerere, who don't see. There were a few who had tried to do law. And that time, the law school was not very inclusive of blind persons. And they left. So I was curious. I said, why are we not able to do law? They told me what is happening. They don't want to hear voices in their library because I have to go with a sighted person to read for me. In their lectures, they don't want to hear the noises of our Parkins Braillers. These are machines blind people
use to help you read.
To take notes. They are like the manual typewriter of those days.
Yeah, and help me understand. Also, when you touch, there's where you can touch and actually read through the, is it Braille?
Braille, that one wouldn't be a problem.
Because it's silent anyway, it's just you touching
but
something.
But to Braille, the machine that writes that Braille.
Is loud. It's almost like a typewriter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it's noisy, and they wouldn't tolerate that in their lectures. So that's how blind people were failing to do load. It's no longer the case today.
What has changed today?
I think they changed the policy with the with the awareness and education that goes on about disability inclusion. They became more inclusive now. I had gotten somebody to sponsor me to do law, even if it meant doing it elsewhere.
Okay.
A reverend who had just come back to Uganda from the US. Somebody linked me up to him.
Okay.
And he said, if that's the case, just study. And when you do your A-levels very well, I'll take you to the States.
Yeah. Just pass.
The following year, he crashed in Rome with Uganda Airlines. You remember that so in my senior four, I changed and said I will go for my second option. My second option, which now became my number one and loved it so much, was mass communications. And so that's
you're one of us.
Yes. That was another big story as well. So I went to Makerere with a good point. They did not know they had brought on board a blind person on the course. I was the first. So they saw me at the time of registration that, hey, what have we done? We brought somebody who don't see.
Come on.
So
you think they would have deterred and taken
if
back?
If they knew beforehand that I don't see, they wouldn't call me for the course.
So how did they adapt to the decision?
So they asked me, we had a doctor that time. I don't know where he is, whether he's still alive, Dr. Gakwande. He told me with his colleagues that you did very well. We want to guide you as your lecturers, your elders.
Okay.
That you can't manage this course. I said, why? I had made friends with others who are on that course, second years and third years. So they had told me what they will tell me I can't do, like photojournalism, and graphics and design. They had told me all those things, and we had discussed with them the options.
That was smart of you to go ahead of the problem.
So when these guys told me, I said, what is it that I can't
most
do
difficult?
Because I don't see? So they told me, I said, no, but we can do the other alternative papers. Yes. Why don't you go for law?
So they were just looking for an excuse to throw you out.
Yes, why don't you why don't you go for law? I said, no. I had studied that option. The university is not yet friendly to us. My friends have all been falling out.
Yes.
They said, okay, you go for education. Education was my second choice in the forms that we filled. So when all that was being discussed, I said, let me also be a devil's advocate. I asked them in the meeting, so if you think that I can't do this course because I'm blind, how do you think I'm going to be a teacher when I'm blind? But I knew very well that most professionals who are blind are teachers. I knew what they do. So, but I knew they don't have the answers. We had Dr. Kidubuka. He died in a bomb blast in Wandegeya when I was still on that course. He said, let's leave this student because... for the 1 month we have been with this new lord, he's one of my top five students. Let's allow him. So I continued on the course, and God helped me. I didn't have any retake.
Wow.
So only in my third term, those days we had terms, I read in the New Vision, blind student wins course. Said, hey, you mean these people are still on this thing? I thought it was over.
Help the listener understand when you say I read in the newspaper.
Oh, somebody read for you.
But
I read.
Curiosity can take a listener.
Oh, yes.
Blind student
wins course. Yes,
that was you.
That was me.
Imagine, the under determined
that
to throw
is now
out.
At Senate level. So that's how I did mass communications and graduated. I had my graduation ceremony in January 1996. Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. When you overcome such odds, does that put a sort of chip on your shoulder when you're like, you see, if I can do this, I can do many other things. Mm-hmm. Is that part of a pushing factor for you in life?
Up to today.
Yeah.
I keep telling colleagues that once you succeed in something, however little, you need to celebrate it. Yes. It pushes you to another level. Mm.
I want to hear what your second song choice would be.
You Do Te Wali by David Lutaro and Bugembe.
Pastor Wilson Bugembe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nabona bona nyonyo kubale na ingira munsi na mubyo kulya muogo gwe mangi. Unazali wane chintu kumbula era mama taka kasoba dala yenze atava kuchitanda mbuto. Unamala ke miezi mukaka ngatemya butemya bwenti siumuza abasaone bagamba nemye netata je yali akola omulimu bagwaona tuyana abakulu n'abato maziga kwetukeera. Seyagala muto wange era ne bwe mbadde nkula nga lwenkeesa maama lwembala nga ntundatunda bundazi taata we yasiika nga nsome tufune neza kamere waka. Olumu babuba bambi ne nkomawo nga maaso genteze muzeeyi na nkaligo wuti nipeo wezera wempitamu nava wabinyo nyonyo mukamori na manyi
Te Wali na kuyambe kubienda vyewe chwe nama kasta wezika mukama ova kone milimu. Te Wali na kuyambe kubienda vyewe chwe nama kasta wezika mukama ova kone milimu. Saka mucha twali butonga tuzanya teka umpuli jejava simanye chifule wa fetwa ndiro oyo mami lwa mutwala e daddy lwa mutwala ne buto wango butali na tabuyi na bolwa mutwala twasigala tuchotayo watali muzada labirira ensigala nga mpunda bunyi. Wala sirimu ya dio te yasike nyumba yonga Daudi mbuza njatia episo yo wakayo ya dio te wafumba wakubiso mulala.
Desert Island Discs on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs and we're back. Normally at this point it would be, oh, that's so sad, and people would be mellow in the story, but I think you've sort of livened up. There's a bit of humor and so much resilience. I have Mr. Julius Kamia here from Equal Opportunities Commission. You requested for David Lutalo and Pastor Wilson Bugembe's Te Wali, beautiful song as well. So you clearly persevered, and when you read, you know, as it was read to you, that you've actually done well and brilliant in the course. Mm-hmm. Where does the journey take you after that? Had you worked even when you were at university?
I started freelancing, doing stories and selling them, but mostly to the Monitor publication.
Okay. What were you writing about? What
kind Anything. Of, yeah. I remember I would write an opinion. I would do a feature. When I finished the course, I also stayed with them.
Okay.
And started doing even hard news. They had a page called Face to Face. I did a few of those. There was a column called Have You Heard?
Yes. Yes.
Well, so something happened at the Monitor publications. About 11 reporters, some of them senior reporters, left. I think there was a little disagreement with the management, and they went and started the crusade.
Yes.
So I thought, this is an opportunity for me to get to the payroll. They advertised, so I applied, but I wasn't shortlisted. What shocked me is that a few colleagues who had never written a story for the Monitor
were given jobs
at the Monitor. They were classmates. Ah, now that threw me aback.
Yeah.
That's one of those moments I felt so low and thought about this blindness. I said, okay, if it wasn't for this, I wouldn't be jobless until now. Mm. I remember the bosses in the Monitor would tell me, they said, Julius, we've taught you, you're very good students.
Mm.
You will be do very well in broadcasting. So if you try broadcast, and then I went to Radio Uganda. The people I found there said, oh, Julius, your writing skills are so good.
Oh, dear.
If you go to the print media.
Everyone was pushing you somewhere else.
So they tossed me around.
Mm.
Meanwhile, when I was in the Monitor, I also wrote a few things on disability.
Mm.
So the National Union of Disabled Persons of Uganda read some of those articles.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in a certain article, I was really very critical of what disability had got in the Constitution, the 1995 Constitution, and said disability gets raw deal. Then our representative then in the CA hit back in the same paper. And my friends laughed and said, Julius, you've been taken by the horns. So we became friends with the executive director of NODIPO at the time. They called me to start covering their events.
Okay.
And before I knew what, he asked me, Julius, are you comfortable where you are?
Mm-hmm.
We are going to advertise jobs we want to develop to workers. I said, I'm not on payroll.
Said, so okay, I can move.
I will apply.
Mm.
So I applied and got a job. I was made development worker in charge of Luwero and Mukono.
Okay.
So I worked with them for about 1.5 years. The project was closed.
Mm.
I went jobless, attempted my first master's,
okay,
which I didn't conclude. 99 ending. I bounced back in NODIPO in a senior position.
Okay.
I was in charge of their advocacy and policy research. So I worked with them for about 6 or so years.
Okay.
And then funding was no more for that work. I left the country after that for a Commonwealth Fellowship.
Okay.
Under voluntary services overseas. So I went to the UK, worked there for some months.
Mm.
And a few of their pounds as well.
It's not a bad idea.
No, was it a bad idea after all? Changing the environment.
Mm.
And then came back. And as I was still writing that report and doing a few consultancies with the colleagues I had worked with in the disability movement here, the executive director of the African Union of the Blind at that time comes looking for a Ugandan to go and work with them in Nairobi.
Mm.
I was seconded by a friend and found my way in Nairobi.
Mm.
I worked with her for about 13, 14 months.
Mm.
And you remember that time when the Kenyans killed one another after election?
After elections, yes.
That time I was working in Nairobi. And somehow a few things wouldn't allow me to continue working with my boss, the executive director.
Mm.
I prayed to God that I get a job back in Uganda.
At home, yeah.
God is always merciful.
Mm.
He gave me the opportunity. And I came back in Uganda in mid-2008 as the first executive secretary for Uganda's National Council for Disability. I worked with the council, mobilizing persons with disabilities countrywide, forming councils in all the districts, linking them to service providers, arguing the case for disability inclusion.
Mm.
A few years later, government started thinking about merging agencies in order to reduce duplicity and reduce public expenditure. I was so scared. I said, what next?
Mm.
Before I knew what, African Union of the Blind, which I had left,
yes,
advertises the job of executive director. I apply reluctant.
Okay. It was a you never know.
I wasn't so keen to get into it.
Okay.
But somehow they shortlisted me. We did interviews remotely.
Okay.
The very day I did interviews, in the evening, they called me back. Julius, we want to discuss with you. Congratulations.
Executive director. Just like that.
I find my way back in Nairobi to head a continental NGO.
Wow.
It was an exciting job, roving all over Africa and beyond.
Good.
I found them really financially stricken. The board of directors of the time had had quarrels with their development partners in their
funders.
Their funders. And so some of the funders had pulled out. Said, let's watch you.
They know where it hurts.
They pulled out, and I found the situation was so bad. So for the 2 years I was there, I was trying to mend relations. And they kept saying, oh, so Julius, you're the one in there? You keep sharing with us information of what you're doing.
Yeah.
So as they were trying to see whether the situation normalizes, I couldn't stay any longer. Because those who kept funding us were always suspicious. Where am I getting the money to pay staff?
So where were you getting the money?
I was squeezing from the little projects that we still had. And they were wondering, how is he sustaining?
So their point was, we pull the funding, they'll close, but you were not closing.
We were not closing.
Okay.
Up to a point when I saw, to me together with the board, we saw we couldn't move any further. So the board proposes to me, let's relieve the accountant of her duties. And then I asked, and then we'll do what with the books? Said, we shall ask the accountant of Kenya Union of the Blind. We were in the same building. We asked them maybe once in 2 weeks to balance our books. I said, okay. Then let's also, we had a bilingual secretary. This is somebody who manages communication with the membership all over the continent, especially doing translations in French and so on. So we leave that one also out, and then we will be doing Google Translator. For very official documents, we'll get resource persons and pay them. I said, you guys are going to demand of these services of me in the same way as if I still had those people here.
Yeah.
So you are going to catch me on inefficiency.
Oh.
Let me sacrifice myself and go.
Okay.
So that you don't relieve those people of their duties. That's how I left Nairobi and came back and stayed jobless for about 6 months, after which I joined the Equal Opportunities Commission.
So that's how you come in.
Yes.
Before that, maybe we can get our third song choice.
Yes, that third song is Silver Chagrin, yes.
Ndi mudungu bwendaba ebyange nga byesibye oho na buli kwembulira ebizibu byange tewali yanyamba laba nsigaza Katonda wange kuba yeye yantonda oba yawonya hano obugumba nange kangume Njagala, nange njagala mkwate kumunagirogo Ena kwene kulukuta Yesu lele kome Tondeka, tondeka mukama kwesu vinyange Mumite kuchiga mojo chechina mponya bamala neba kulaba nange sigwe mumanyi mukama ntunulidde gwe nga bwogunya abalala nange mponya
Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs enjoying this conversation. Tondeka Silva Chagulanyi is the one we just listened to as requested by you, Julius Kamia, from Equal Opportunities Commission. What a point of the story where you had now come to Equal Opportunities. What year is this? This is
I joined Equal Opportunities Commission in 2015. Yes.
For those who may not know, maybe in a sentence or two, what Equal Opportunities Commission does.
Yes, Flavia, the Equal Opportunities Commission is a government body which is established in Article 32 of our national constitution, and it is operationalized by the Equal Opportunities Commission Act to promote equal opportunities for all Ugandans, but more specifically, affirmative action for those who are marginalized or vulnerable.
Right.
And these include people with disabilities, the women, youth, ethnic minorities, rural, urban poor, people living with HIV, AIDS, and other chronic diseases, and so on, to ensure that they are included in decision-making in all development processes. The principle under the Sustainable Development Goals of leaving no one behind.
Of course.
That's what the Equal Opportunities stands for. Mm. Because if you leave certain categories of people behind, then you leave a burden to the others to lift them up or to look after them.
Yeah.
Make them productive so that they are useful to the nation.
That's what development means. It means everybody is developed. A few years ago, I interviewed a team from, you know, Nudipu, Nwodu, and a couple of others, and I think it was around the conversation of how technology had advanced.
Yes.
And I think it had mainly also advanced for inclusion.
Yes.
But around the conversation, I said, do you want it to be inclusion, which is maybe Flavia who can see and Julius Kamia who, you know, is blind, are in the same place and are vying for the same opportunity? Or would you prefer that opportunities are created where you can actually thrive and work versus now competing with, I wouldn't even want to use the word able person, because that is relative also.
If our case would be non-disabled.
Non-disabled.
Uh-huh.
And I think the conversations, they were skewed, because some people said, you know what, I think it's easier because I'm using a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to find me a job with somebody whose two limbs are working?
Mm.
We will never be equal.
Mm.
Yeah, we'll never be the same. So isn't it better that jobs are created for us, uniquely for us, despite of the fact that it's in a world where perhaps it's not for only us? And that's a conversation that I never got a real true answer to.
You get the real answer now.
Tell me.
What you asking me to clarify is the debate between equality and equity. You cannot in this world get equality.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's why I said the Equal Opportunities Commission wants to see that opportunities are equalized. You promote equal opportunities for all.
Mm.
That's the first step.
Okay.
But more specifically, you want equitable distribution of resources, services, equitable distribution of responsibility.
Right.
So what you are saying is actually calls for a double-pronged approach.
Mm.
You can't take one side to be the magic bullet. One thing is that if you only create special jobs, talking about employment, you are going to promote discrimination before you realize.
Yes.
These people are going to find themselves isolated. If it is Nudipu, for instance, then Nudipu will say, we want only disabled people to work here.
Exactly.
You isolate yourselves.
So the same way the quote-unquote able-bodied are discriminating, you would be doing the exact thing on the other side. Yeah.
So what you want to do is to make sure that because persons with disabilities are not on a certain island on themselves.
No.
They are in our families.
Yes.
In our communities.
Our children. They are us.
They are us.
Yes.
They are everywhere. Make the situation conducive for them to thrive, for them to participate with the supports that they need.
Okay.
Let them be in there. For those unique situations where you want some special attention, then that's when you call for really affirmative yeah. action.
Okay.
So you want to do both.
Okay.
You want to do both, really.
So not just one.
Not just one. That is the double-pronged
approach.
I wouldn't be able to study with the sighted students in Iganges.
Yeah.
Sighted students in Makerere
University. University, yeah.
Even for my first and second masters, I've not been with blind people. I've been with sighted
people. Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, you're right. Both have to happen.
Yes.
What's the fourth song that you'd love for us to hear?
Let's take Mobi Wobi.
David Lutalo.
For David Lutalo.
And Maro.
This one of a kind.
Mind, she truly says she wants to go. As if as it were, ne loyal is in Papulan signing. Me pangalia mazan fumbida, ma fumbida no bongo. En si gozena linga siga, as we kungula valero. Ne tonse, yo naviganya ya galanchi colentia. No jene loya, te mari wonga sala wotre wase. Sase watuare Mupi mupi Yacha na kafera Wanchale serole Munyazi munyazi Sewentu yo zange Sase watuare Musasiri na chendina Epale mwendi chembala Eyali nangamaka Katikubala kwesura Tewali chalina Yali na mubu sapatu wapuru Nankavira mazika watu Na kwe muluma Bu mama yafa Le tata yafa Kasi njiri munga wendi Nasoma mata Omwana yanywa Na yande kandi masikini Yalitalina ya desikati Yandabi siso ubi wenti E wange ya japuika kubo Mwana pira Mupi mupi Kacha na kavera Wachareza lore
Desert Island Discs on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Okay, it's Mubi Wubi from David Lutalo and Maro. By the way, it was a feature. Is it what I would call it? It's a feature by two people. But that was your request there. Mr. Julius Kamia, you tried sort of hinting at it when I think you mentioned about reading at the university, that in the library. And I said, why would there be talking? And you said, somebody has to read for me. Is that till today perhaps that you have somebody who has to, or there's an adaptation at some point, or you need someone in certain incidences?
I'm doing both.
Okay.
The technology has moved us very far.
Right.
I buy a computer from a street in Kampala. The computer, the laptop that you also buy.
Yeah.
Then in addition, I will buy a screen reader, which is a program like any other computer program.
Yeah.
So I install it, and that screen reader is going to be my screen.
Right.
Because I don't see your screen.
Yeah.
So this screen reader, there are many screen readers, But what seems to be a darling to many is what is called job access with speech. Mm-hmm. So you are free to make it say whatever you do on the computer. Mm. People think that the screen reader tells me what to do, but conversely, I tell the screen reader what I'm doing.
Okay.
So I only ask it to say what I want it to say.
Right.
If I want to type in silence, I will type in silence. If I want to type as it mentions what I'm typing,
right,
I will
read
so.
Back to you.
Exactly. Mm. And that happens even for documents which are shared with me electronically, it will be able to
So
read.
You can receive an email, you can be able to quote-unquote read an email
exactly.
or hear an email.
And
revert
reply.
Back.
Exactly.
Great.
But of course, there is information that is already in printed text. Mm-hmm. There is still technology that enables us to scan and read.
Yes.
But that's not at the disposal of everyone.
Although even our usual phones, I have text-to-speech, speech-to-text.
Exactly.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
I think some people just don't bother to to see.
So I am supported at the Opportunities Commission to have a personal assistant who doubles as my driver.
Ah,
so he can read to me internal memos and other print text.
Okay.
Yeah, because I have not yet bought those other gadgets that can read back to me. The printed text.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if someone handed you a document right now, that's what you mean?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
They had a document, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm assuming there's a level of trust that and a bond and the relationship you have to create with this person.
Oh, yes. Yes. You have to be with somebody that you really trust. Mm. I have been with him at the Equal Opportunities Commission since 2015.
Oh, wow.
People have drivers who stay with them for a year or less. They go. We are together for the last 8 years or so.
That one is a staunch relationship. Help me understand what you believe has... I mean, of course, there's been many, many, many great improvements from the 70s till now.
Mm-hmm.
But what you believe has probably been the biggest advantage in advancement or development to support you or people in, you know, like you?
People like us. Mm. I think one of the things is what we have just talked about, because the world is really moving very fast with the technology. If I am able to use a computer independently, that's really a great stride. There's a lot in technology. The white cane, in our case, is not a new thing. What we had here, we would just say maybe a stick.
You used to use a stick.
You get a stick from the forest, as long as it is straight. It's cleaned properly, and somebody would.
Right.
But if you are in a place that is built up well, like a floor like this one here, and you want to use your cane, you need a cane possibly with a rolling tip.
So
because the little disadvantage with the other stick is that you lift and hit, but the one with the rolling tip, you may choose not to lift it up and
move
as it is rolling.
It's almost like you're wheeling it.
You're wheeling it. So the chances that you'll miss a hole and step into it are minimized. There is a lot that is happening. Browsing the web. They have really tried to make sure that we are included.
Yes.
So you get to the webmail and you have the option of turning on accessibility features. The phones today, you have iPhone is the best I think I have come across, which is accommodative. It is already installed with a voiceover.
Yeah.
So if you don't see, you just activate it.
That's true.
You activate the voiceover, and you're able to use your phone independently.
Yeah.
You can text, you can read the SMS, you can go to WhatsApp. We are real there.
Being at Equal Opportunities, and also I think I had the first streak of wanting to do better from when you were saying that I was at university and I was seeing this, you know, people looking at me differently and wanting to take my chance away from me.
Mm.
You sounded to me like someone who is determined to see a difference for, you know, your peers.
Mm-hmm.
I know being at Equal Opportunities accords you a chance to make an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Are you proud of anything that you might want to share with us? You know, just even if it's some, you know, people around you, just being able to understand.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I have had a journey. I don't want to be proud as an individual that, oh, I was so good and so all that. I keep saying it has been God's grace.
Yes.
My presence in the face of parents who have children like me is a huge motivator.
Yeah.
I've had in a number of people who have said, if he made it,
so can mine.
My child can as well do it. And they have taken their children to school.
Wow.
So I have used myself as a role model.
Yes.
And many people, we've had so many visually impaired children going all the way up to university.
Well done.
Doing different courses. At the Equal Opportunities Commission, I work with a team to make sure that our government makes provision in all its plans and budgets, makes plans for, among other vulnerable groups, for persons with disabilities.
Yes.
And we do that supported by the law, specifically the Public Finance Management Act. It empowers the Equal Opportunities Commission to assess the budget framework papers and the ministerial policy statements, but also the national budget, to make sure that it is gender and equity responsive. What are those interventions that are put in place by the different agencies of government to address the needs and interests of these various groups?
Yeah.
So if you do not have those provisions, we don't recommend you to the minister responsible for finance to get financial appropriation in the ensuing year. So for me, that has been one of those practical things that we are doing at the commission to make sure that nobody is left behind. That's why now you have the special grant for older persons.
Mm.
You have a disability grants. You have the YLP, Youth Livelihood Program. And so on and so forth. Under the financial inclusion in the parish development model, that's why you have those breakdowns of, for every 100 million in the parish, 30% will go for the vulnerable women, 30% for the vulnerable youth in the parish, 10% for persons with disabilities, 10% for older persons, and the remaining 20, the others.
Right. So for when a parent has a child who might have the same issue or something different, but still see how many odds you've bitten to get to where you are, they're encouraged. But as a child, you know, because there's always, when you look at your parents or the family, you go back and forth, you know, go to this herbalist, try this, try that. But for you, you're also a human being.
Mm-hmm.
You have your own thoughts. What would you want parents to know if they have a child and are going through the same thing?
No, the parent who has a child like me or similar, you need to know that God has created us with various capabilities. If I lose sight, that's only one sense gone, and it provides opportunity for other senses
to
be lifted up.
Yeah.
So my sense of hearing, touch,
smell,
those ones may not be equaled by somebody who has sight.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they are given to blind people, but they have naturally been supported, I think, to support me.
Ah, right.
Yes, because I have no option of seeing, they have to grow up and
be more alert,
be more alert and compensate for the loss of sight. So the parent needs to know that this child remains with their other faculties. And they need to leverage on that to make sure you make your child a productive citizen of this country.
Yes.
Invest in them. In fact, if you had the option of who to support among your children because of your limited resources, you need to support that child because their options are limited.
Right.
My late mom would say, I am really concerned that you get education because you do not have many options. She would give the examples. Toja kusindika chigali, kusomba mazi. You are not going to stand in the tax park calling people one day and so on. So I need to make sure you get education, and by God willing, you might get a job.
Okay,
I loved that. When I remember her, I remember those words from her. I thought, wow, my mom, who never stepped in the P7 class, had this vision. Mm. Her soul rest in peace.
Indeed.
Yes, so the other parents, I think you need to make sure that this child at one time might be in their life without you.
Mm.
You need to support them, to support themselves and possibly their
to
families.
Adapt,
yes,
yeah.
They need to adapt.
I guess it's to have a vision that is bigger than the challenge that you're facing with your
yes.
child. Whatever disability you think,
yes.
that can't be it. So your vision has to go beyond.
It has to go beyond.
That particular.
The challenge should provide you with opportunities.
In fact.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Thank you so much, Mr. Julius Kamia, for sharing your story. We are left much better by hearing that story.
Yeah.
I wonder what the final song choice, as you say, by will be.
I have a song by Judith
Babidie,
Ambatira Mukama, and that is a real call on the Holy Spirit
mm.
to dawn, to hover over me.
Right.
I told you that I have since added on 2 masters on my undergraduate. Mukama needs to okumpa mbatira as I journey towards my PhD. And I'm doing that not later than next year.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, nange nyonge ndike sala.
Yes.
Ujatukayo. Thank you so much. We are blessed to have heard your story, Mr. Julius Kamia. Mpambatira Mukama Judith Babidie as we sign out. It's been Desert Island Discs. Good night.
FM, fresh hits for Uganda.